It's Alum Group's Andrea Lay, PacFew's Melissa Burdick, live with me here in Connecticut, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Tree, and I'm PBSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 15th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them hubristically intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with Retail Wit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Melissa, kick us off.
Hey, Fresh Four listeners. Dollar General celebrates opening its 20,000th store. There you go, 20,000. U.S.-based discount retailer Dollar General has opened its 20,000th store, celebrating the occasion in Alice, Texas. The grand opening celebrations were attended by senior leaders and vendors. Dollar General Executive Vice President of Store Operations and Development, Steve Deckard, commented, "We believe each store provides a positive impact in our hometowns through convenient access to affordable essentials, career growth, opportunities for employees, and the ability for local nonprofits, schools, and libraries to advance through Dollar General Literacy Foundation grants." Dollar General also awarded $20,000 to support educational and tutoring programs through donations to a local library and community group, as well as providing new books to a local elementary school. Dollar General employs more than 17,500 Texas employees through its store, distribution center, and private fleet presence in the state. On to you, Sri.
Thank you, Melissa and Peter. Jessica Alba has actually stepped down as Chief Creative Officer of The Honest Company, a company she founded. So after nearly 12 years of the company, Alba shared the news in an Instagram post on Tuesday, April 9th. "It is with grateful heart that 12 years after founding The Honest Company, I'm stepping down from my leadership role as CCO. However, I will continue to provide strategic advice through my role on the board," Alba wrote. What's next, Peter?
Oreo reimagines ubiquitous internet menu icon to dole out discounts. Mondelez international brand Oreo has launched a commerce activation dubbed the Oreo menu that aims to re-envision the internet's ubiquitous three-line hamburger menu navigation tool as a two-stacked Oreo cookies. Key to the effort is a microsite where consumers can enter any tab or category name they see when clicking on the three-bar menu icon on the internet as a promo code to receive a deal for Oreo cookies that can be redeemed at Kroger as part of an exclusive partnership. The activation includes an explanatory video and is being driven by influencer content along with digital and social media to drive engagement. The effort follows Oreo's first Super Bowl ad in a decade earlier this year. Andrea, what do you have to close us out?
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Shein has copyright infringement baked into its business model. Shein is facing a class action lawsuit that alleges that the fast fashion company uses an industrial scale scheme of systematic digital copyright infringement against small designers and artists, according to court documents last week. Attorneys for the group of plaintiffs say that Shein uses sophisticated electronic systems that algorithmically scour the internet for popular works created by artists and misappropriates these works to manufacture and sell them as Shein products without attribution to the creators. The complaint is the latest in a series of copyright infringement lawsuits filed against the fast fashion giant, including an ongoing one from last year that claimed violation of the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act.
Thank you, Andrea. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded.
Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sri and Peter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, a.k.a. the gregarious CPG Guy. My domains of expertise revolve around the digital shelf, retail,
customer data, insight, CRM, and loyalty. And my co-host, he's the brooding CPG guy. He's an expert at branding, direct to consumer, unified commerce, retail media, and marketplace. He's the corned beef to my cabbage, the palm to my sundae, the Easter to my egg. Please join me welcoming the man with one name, Sri. Sri, how are you today?
Awesome, Peter. 70 degrees in New York, can't complain. But by virtue of the description, I get to ask the dark questions today.
You do get to ask the dark questions. You're the brooding CPG guy. Anyhow, before we get to our guests, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, including our series on profitability, one of our most popular, our Women's Leadership Series, our Q1 Founders Series, all of that, along with a lot of documents or a list of our favorite podcasts, you can get that all for free. We don't charge you for it. Just go to cpgguys.com. And also, you got to remember that our content on the show is audience driven, which means what you want to see is what we want to deliver. So there's an easy way to do that. Just go to ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys. Click on the Apple platform and leave us a review. Write a review there. Also, you can give a rating, a star rating. We're particularly obsessed with number 5, right, Sri? 5, high five? High five? Air 5? Yeah, okay. Just go there and leave us a rating review, because that's what's going to determine the people we invite on and the topics we discuss. Sound good? That's pretty good. So our guest today comes from the media space, Sri. Media space. So Grocery Dive, which is part of the Industry Dive portfolio of news sources, provides in-depth journalism and insights into the news and trends shaping the grocery industry. We're all about grocery, aren't we, Sri? We love that. We came from grocery. The newsletter and website cover topics such as shopper behavior, omnichannel, e-commerce, pricing and discounting, store formats, and a whole lot more. So please join Sri and me in welcoming the podcast, the senior editor for Grocery Dive, Jeff Wells. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Feeling hopeful. It's Friday. It's sunny out here in Seattle, and the days are getting longer and more vaccines are on the way. So all in all, pretty good.
Amen to that, Mr. Wells. Amen. So before we get into the questions, would you mind sharing with our audience first a quick summary of the specific focus of Grocery Dive and also where people can find your site on the internet?
Sure. So Grocery Dive, we're a daily publication that covers the food retail industry. We're kind of the new kid on the block among publications in the space. So we try and focus our journalism on an area where we believe we can offer the most value, and that's industry transformation, digital transformation, e-commerce, shifting consumer habits, new store formats. I like to say we're really focused on what's next in the business, a business that's evolving very rapidly with a pandemic and online movement and all those sorts of things. We are digital only, so we don't have pesky print costs to deal with, and we're optimized for mobile. Our website is grocerydive.com, and we also put out a daily email newsletter.
Hey, Peter. Do you know other people in this recording that also talk about industry transformation?
I don't know anyone who does that.
That's got to be the first.
Radically new to me.
That's what I figured.
Sri, what I got out of that is hashtag NKOTB. Sorry, it's my boy band obsession. Anyhow, so thank you, Jeff. That's really great. Why don't we actually just get right into the questions, because we have a lot we want to talk to you about, because you're at the forefront of understanding what everybody in the industry is talking about right now. So first, let's get a little background on the actual content that you are sharing with the marketplace. It appears that while you are aggregating some grocery retail-related news, you're also producing a lot of original reporting and investigation. Is this true? And if you are doing some external sourcing, how do you go about sourcing that external content?
Yeah, right. This is interesting because it kind of tracks our evolution as a publication. When I came in, back when we were still under Food Dive, which is our dive, as we call it, that covers the CPG and the supplier side of the industry, It was all we all we did was aggregate stories that included from other business publications. So it was a lot of, you know, according to Supermarket News and according to Progressive Grocer, and that didn't seem like very good strategy to me. So now we practice primary sourcing just like the other business publications. We're a little more transparent about it. We have that bullet point format. We're oftentimes in the first bullet point, we're saying, you know, it came from a press release, or, you know, if it came from a local news report, we point that out. But we're really just looking for, on any given day, you know, what are the, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 most interesting stories that we can relay to our readers, announcements, reports, you know, we get source tips, in numerous cases, some exclusives. But if you just go off of the daily announcements and press releases and things like that, you miss a lot. There's so much that's going on in the industry aside from that. So we're having lots of conversations with experts and other stakeholders in the industry, and that really leads us to stories that we do. We do articles. We do what we call deep dives, which are kind of longer features, examining industry trends, answering pressing questions, really looking to what's next. Some recent examples include, we had a series that looked at the expansion of SNAP Online, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, to retailers across the country, digital marketplaces from the likes of Kroger and Ahold Delhaize, the future of store design and how the pandemic has influenced that, and a lot of other topics.
Peter brought back memories of the 80s and growing up in grade school in India. NKO TV was on the repeat playlist every day on a Sony Walkman.
You see the thing that he got out of that, Jack? It was just the boy band obsession. But
well, the first question is going to be all about hanging tough. You ready, Jeff? Ready to hang tough?
That's all I do is hang tough.
I'm only teasing, Jeff. I think where we're going to jump in next is how you actually relay the messages that you want to put out every single week. As of A, please do tell us how often do you put out news and press briefs and things of that nature about the industry, white papers as the case may be. And then how do you actually reach your audience? Do you actually email these over? Is there a website people come to? Is there a Facebook? What is the primary driver?
Yeah, the primary driver is the daily email newsletter that we send out. That's what drives most of our traffic. And every day we're thinking through, we have a team of 3 right now. And so we're always thinking through, how do we make that as impactful as possible? Our headlines, our subject line, the order of the stories that we put in there. And that usually comes out in the early afternoon. So that allows us to, we can cover morning news, that hits. And then we get a decent amount of direct website traffic. Search traffic drives a lot of new viewers to our website. And then we really like, we have a social media presence as well, of course. LinkedIn has been a really great tool. I'm sure that's something that you guys have seen, the way that some of those stories can snowball with shares and comments. And so those are kind of the main drivers for us. We will put out some different reports. So we put out a trend line. That's something called a trend line. That's that we sell as a product on the ad side that focuses on a topic such as, you know, e-commerce or private label. And then we'll do a yearly awards section, like most of the other trade publications do, where we're recognizing the top names in the industry. But it really is that daily newsletter that drives our awareness.
I've heard Peter might know somebody who does awards, annual awards as well.
Award ceremony. Wow. Omnis. I remember that, Sri. Wasn't that fun? Those were a fun time.
But, and so, Jeff, you talked about the various platforms, with the primary one being email. What about Clubhouse, Jeff? Peter and I got on last night, actually.
Not on that yet. I haven't even done it. Would you guys recommend it?
You know, Sri, I think after this, we need to invite Jeff to be on a Clubhouse room that we host so we can just take questions from people that are interested in this space. So maybe Jeff, you'll deign to consider hanging with the CPG guys on Clubhouse.
I would love to. Absolutely.
Oh, that is appointment television as far as I'm concerned. Oh, wait, it's not television. Anyhow, you know what I mean. But
it's been rumored Peter has a radio face.
And my wife tells me I have a face made for radio, which is question that. Anyhow, I'm just kidding, Zara. That's not what you said. I'm just making it up. She listens to all my podcasts. And if I say things like that, I hear about it. So anyhow. So let's get to the next question. We talked about you creating some original content. Your site clearly has marked an opinion section. So I'm curious as to how you decide on whether to author opinions rather than kind of reporting on issues of interest.
Right. So yeah, that opinion section is that's strictly for guest contributors. Submissions. Yeah. The only opinion that we will do is I do a column. It's supposed to be monthly. I've let it stretch out past that a little bit, called Pardon the Disruption. That's looking at various trends and issues in the industry. Just did one on Instacart that you guys might find interesting. That's the only thing we'll do in-house that would qualify as an opinion piece. But that's a section that where it's we turn it over to an expert in the industry. And we're trying to with that. There's a submission page that comes with that. So readers, if they have something they really want to write about that they think would be good for our audience, they can submit there. We're fairly picky about what we select, and we're trying to do a little bit more outreach on our own to try and kind of handpick the experts that we want writing, because you know we want these pieces to be interesting and informative, and not treading over ground that we've already been over in our reporting. You know, we get a lot of submissions that are like how Amazon is changing the grocery industry. And, you know, we feel like we do a pretty good job reporting on that on our own. We're also always trying to find pieces that aren't promotional. If you're an AI software company and you're writing a piece about why AI software is great for grocers, that's not as much of a good fit for that section, because the emphasis is on being informative and broadly appealing to our readers. But yeah, that section is driven by guest contributors.
So Jeff, to follow up on that, if say a couple of CPG guys had an opinion and we were to submit it, we might get considered for that?
Yeah, I would say you guys have an in at this point.
Score.
So, poetry. Yeah, we can talk more about that offline.
Okay.
That said, you know, when you think about what's taking place in our industry and you mentioned transformation way up front, that's the mission of what you do. The industry has certainly gone through a rapid maturity transformation in the last 12 to 15 months, for sure. You know, an industry that was already transforming based on consumer habits. So if I put that as a backdrop, Jeff, what are some of the most important subjects recently that you're seeking to inform your audience on, and how do you find those?
Yeah, I mean, a huge one is e-commerce. The sea change that's happened in e-commerce, the way that the pandemic has pushed the timeline ahead for that channel by, you know, I hear 2 years, 3 years, and we're examining everything, really the end-to-end experience on there. We're looking at the front-end experience. We're looking at back-end fulfillment, app development, things like that. And we're also just looking at technology, mobile apps, frictionless checkout, automation in the industry. And I also think something that we're really fascinated by is the evolution of the store brought on by the pandemic. How might the grocery store look different, a couple of years from now, a year from now? We're hearing some really interesting things around that. And you know, as far as where do we find this information, it, you know, it usually starts by, you know, we just have a question. You know, we have a pressing question. You know, one question we had a while ago was, you know, we're reading a lot about micro fulfillment. Is that really the end all be all for the industry, like so many people say it is? And we dug into that. My colleague Sam Silverstein did some really deep sourcing on that, came up with a really, you know, thought-provoking piece on that, I thought. Same thing with Instacart, another, I know the company that you guys have focused on before. Wondering what might happen to self-service bars in grocery stores. So I think it's a lot of the content we have, it comes from, you know, it starts with company announcements. It starts with conversations that we have with sources. I would also say that a lot of it comes out of just thinking as grocery consumers. I mean, we are in grocery stores every week. We're ordering online. I mean, sometimes just wearing our consumer hat, thinking, you know, how might this experience change? Or maybe we notice something in a store that kind of piqued our interest. So we just really try and have our feelers out and just really emphasize just having a lot of conversations in the industry and trying to get as good of a sense as we can about what's going on, not just in terms of what, you know, companies are saying in a public facing way, but also what people are talking about behind the scenes.
Thinking like a consumer. Brilliant. Heard that the mantra of Kroger, right? Customer first. I think that's phenomenal, Jeff. That's terrific. Well, you open the door. I'm going to walk through. Let's talk about Instacart. Sure. They are a juggernaut. They hardly a day goes by they're not adding another retailer to their marketplace. So here's my question to you. For the big retailers, they're going about creating their own digital experience as an and rather than an or, right? So they're part of Instacart, but they have their own digital storefront. Beyond the national retailers and the super regionals, you know, the Publix, Wegmans, Meijer, HEB, right? Getting down to the next level, the Raley's, the KVATs, Schnucks, ShopRite, those guys. So are you seeing them thinking about going this route of what the big guys are doing of creating their own digital storefront? Or are they just at the point now where the cost to do that, the juice isn't worth the squeeze? And here you've got Instacart. There are no capital investments in this, and that is just going to be their strategy for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is a topic that just is endlessly fascinating to me, because you had a company, you know, Instacart, that was written off once when Whole Foods was acquired by Amazon. A lot of people in the industry kind of wrote them off again, I think, you know, around the time before the pandemic hit. And they have just capitalized on, you know, that industry need. You know, first it was a lot of retailers, you know, needing to plug into the online opportunity. And I think during the pandemic, what you've really seen is just a lot of consumer-driven growth. And that's made things, their relationship with retailers is very complex, I would say, because I think retailers need them on one hand, you know, they really need the Instacart marketplace. They need that, you know, fire hose of consumer demand that Instacart directs to them. But they are that, like you said, the larger retailers, they're pushing back operationally. You know, they want to be owning more of that website experience. They want to use more of their workers picking and packing online grocery orders. Kroger is moving into its own automated, large-scale automated fulfillment operations. So it seems to me like when you get down to some of the mid-market and smaller grocery stores that, you know, they may not have the capital to own everything. So then they have to think about, well, what do we own? We kind of have to pick and choose. And it depends on the retailer, I think. You might have some that they want to own that, the customer data, the online, you know, the website, the web experience, the mobile app. They want to have their own workers doing more of the picking and packing, but, you know, they're more agnostic when it comes to, you know, maybe some of the backend technology for either pickup or delivery. They still want to use Instacart to drive orders to consumers' homes. You know, and I think as you go down the chain to a lot of the independent grocers, I mean, Instacart, I think, still would remain a vital outlet for them. You know, they could handle, you know, the white label online experience. They could handle the fulfillment operations. And, you know, I think from Instacart's standpoint, I wonder what they're going to do. I mean, I think they're looking to expand their services. They're getting into fulfillment. Will they, you know, how successful will that be with grocers? I think they could be successful with some of those smaller grocers. But I really think that to kind of put a point on it, some of those smaller and kind of mid-tier grocers, I think it comes down to they have to figure out what part of the experience they want to own, understanding they can't own all of it because that's just so expensive. But you can't turn away Instacart entirely. There's just too much consumer demand.
You brought up Amazon and Whole Foods. So let's jump to that section. You know, Amazon over the course of the pandemic has opened a few actual brick and mortar Amazon Fresh grocery stores, but they also had a business called Amazon Fresh Home Delivery business, which really the plane didn't seem to take off in any phenomenal way based on Amazon's own public reporting. And so what's going on over here when it comes to Amazon and Fresh Grocery? Has the attention all shifted to the brick and mortar format and being an omnichannel retailer with a brick and mortar footprint?
Yeah, I think this. I think it's all about the physical stores for them right now. Those Amazon Fresh stores. They want. They're building them out rapidly. They've got 11 that are open now. We've heard that they've got, you know, 100 more in the pipeline. There was a Bloomberg report that said there are 28, I think, more that are set to open. Amazon wants those stores coding all of these major markets where you have a lot of prime consumers. They want to offer the Amazon Fresh brand as an omni-channel service to reach more shoppers and add value to that prime membership. So yeah, you haven't heard quite as much about the online element of that, but I really think that what they're trying to do, and it's in a lot of the major markets, I really think what they're trying to do is get that omni-channel experience up and running, and then, you know, add more technology to it as Amazon does.
And so, Jeff, in the future, do you potentially see, you know, as a way to mitigate these home delivery fulfillment shipping costs, that these stores become hub locations for people to come and pick up products that they order online, and they don't have to be food and you know, perishables?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And from what I've heard from experts in the industry who have been to the stores and who study Amazon really closely is, you know, they say the Amazon grocery stores they're almost like online fulfillment hubs that are open to the public. You know, they carry that assortment of fast moving goods, of meals and other things that that can appeal to local consumers. And the, you know, the focus is on fast delivery, you know, in an hour or less, and from a pickup point. And that other point of it, I mean, pickup has just exploded in popularity during the pandemic. And I think that's also what Amazon is thinking about in all of this, is they have the Fresh Amazon Fresh delivery, but they also really need those pickup points. And the store format allows them to do that and really just round out that omnichannel experience.
So the most important brand to any grocery retailer that they carry in their store is their own brand, right? Because it presents them with the greatest margin opportunity. I don't think that's a shock to anyone, right?
Right.
So what are you seeing in terms of retailers being able to grow their private label business during this pandemic? I mean, in your opinion, is e-commerce good, bad, or indifferent as it relates to private label? And I'd just add on to that. Is that different when the customer experience is owned by the retailer itself or if they're going through the Instacart marketplace?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think first, I mean, private label continues to evolve in these grocery stores. I mean, what we see is just in continuing sophistication within these brands, offering things like plant-based lines, you know, meat alternatives, really on-trend, natural and organic brands, you know, sustainable, eco-friendly lines, you know, lines specifically devoted to, you know, having a green alternative. You know, Kroger's Simple Truth, which is just one of the biggest success stories in the industry, is now brings in more than $3 billion annually. Target is really getting going aggressively into grocery private label. Good & Gather is now have brought in more than $2 billion, and they just announced a new grocery brand. So as far as e-commerce goes, and I haven't studied this part of private label really closely, but this is making me want to, because I think it makes sense to me that retailers would use their e-commerce properties to promote their private label selection. You know, maybe they could give them prime space. My sense is that's easier to do when they own the platform, and you don't have, say, an Instacart, which may have, you know, there may be marketing spend that's influencing, you know, where products go and how they're promoted. But I mean, the margin case for private label remains really strong, and e-commerce as an opportunity to not only give those products prime space, but to use some real estate in the app and online to promote those goods as well.
Let's jump to the wonderful world of beverages. Beverages that Peter and Sri will have late this evening, perhaps with that dinner. And so when I think about the alcohol beverage market and home delivery, it's still largely subject to state-level laws, due to which, you know, certain retailers haven't really been able to penetrate that portion for e-commerce. And Drizly, through a marketplace-like ecosystem, is actually putting a dent on the map. What are the latest developments there? Do you ever see that dramatically changing?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see some thawing there, and we'll probably continue to see that just because of the market pressure that's coming in there. I mean, just a major growth in online alcohol sales. I think one of the biggest barriers that online alcohol companies, even grocers included, faced was just a lack of awareness. You know, I think in the states where you can order alcohol for delivery, a lot of people didn't realize that you could actually do that. I think it's around 32 states that allow alcohol delivery in some form. And you saw some relaxation of some regulations during the pandemic. Some of that was, you know, around restaurants and allowing restaurants to offer you know, off-premise sales. But you're also seeing it as it relates to grocery and some of these companies, you know, like Drizly, like Thirsty. And I think there's one thing that's really interesting I've noticed is in some of these southern states that have long had restrictive stance on alcohol laws and on online alcohol sales, you're seeing some movement there. Georgia made alcohol delivery legal last summer. Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Arkansas, they also have bills that are in the works. And these vary kind of in their scope. You know, some apply to retail, some to restaurants. Some like Alabama's, it seems like it's more broadly based. But I do think that just because of the consumer demand and just the business case out there, that you're going to continue to see these regulations evolve.
You know, Jeff, there's one CPG guy who introduced Drizly to another CPG guy. and it fundamentally changed his life forever in a good way, right, Sri?
Yeah, and then one CPG guy decided that he'll no longer be participating in those purchases.
I know. I'm on the wagon, people. Big change.
I have to try it. I've not done that yet. I'll have to. I need to try it as well.
All right. Last question, Jeff, before we let you go on this lovely Friday afternoon. And of course, we got to talk about the pandemic because it's what we live. You know, it's interesting. You think about all that's changed in the physical store as a result of that. I can't go to a salad bar or a buffet anymore. I've got plexiglass barriers at the checkout and lots of other places. Yet in last night's address to the nation, the president said, all things being considered, there's a good chance we can go back to a measure of normalcy by July. So the 4th of July in particular. So to that end, what components do you think in an in-store experience are going to move back in that direction of pre-COVID? And what do you think's changed for good from what you're learning and what you're hearing from retailers?
Yeah, I think the store experience, like I said, is something we've been really fascinated by. We've seen a lot of reader interest whenever we've covered something like, what's the future of salad bars? Is it salad bar robots? Is it packaged salads? Is it something else? I think you just had the store experience has changed so dramatically. That includes safety measures, you know, like plexiglass, installing air filters, one-way aisles. And I think that those will eventually pull back. But I think that there will be some long-term changes to the store experience from what we're hearing. One area is food service, and the other that I'm interested to see is center store. I think on the food service front, you had salad bars and self-service stations that had to shut down, or that maybe were reopened in a limited capacity that doesn't really seem like it appeals very much to consumers. And that was a big blow to a lot of retailers, but I think it also, what we've heard is that it also offered an opportunity for retailers to rethink some of these departments. Salad bars were a money loser for a lot of grocers. And so they have this opportunity to rethink that section. There's a grocer in Ohio, really well-respected grocer called Heinen's. And they are looking at only doing packaged salads. And if they ever brought the salad bar back, it might only be half the size of the previous salad bar. So they see it as an opportunity to remake that part of the store. And then I'm really curious to see what happens with center store, because I think you had this this section that was, for a lot of grocers, it was sales were, you know, kind of stagnant. You know, growth in some categories, not in others, but I think there's foundational changes in home consumption and in eating meals and making meals from home. A lot of companies are introducing more flexible work from home schedules. And so I think you might see this prolonged interest in cooking at home. And so what might that mean for the center of the store in terms of, you know, sampling, in terms of merchandising? I'd just be really interested to see what happens there. And, you know, a big question, obviously, is what happens when restaurants reopen, when people spend more time away from home. But I think the supermarket will see some long-term changes coming out of this pandemic.
Peter, are you worried like me that we can no longer have seconds on the buffet line of tikka masala?
Oh my God, that right alone is what I miss the most.
That would be devastating.
I'll tell you, Sri, I don't know about you, but I was never exactly the best person at adhering to the one-way aisle ordinance. I was a bit of a scofflaw in that respect. I'm not afraid to say it, but it's been very interesting to watch what's going on in terms of the store structure. To your point, Jeff, I know, Sri, you probably have been to the Whole Foods below Time Warner Center. And if you looked at what the layout was pre-pandemic versus what it is now, it was predominantly a prepared foods smorgasbord of self-service. And, it's much more structured and it's all packaged away, and the ability to create your own salad is no longer an option. I don't know, to Jess's point, whether that's going to go back if a lot of retailers looked at it as more of a cost of doing business and not a profit center. So in any event, before we say goodbye, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, our audio podcast available on 20 platforms, our YouTube channel, our list of preferred podcasts that we listen to, some documents around our profitability series, all that's available. It doesn't cost you a penny. We don't charge you anything. There's no paywall. Just go to cptguys.com. You can find it all there. And of course, we want your feedback. We want to make sure this podcast is responsive to what our audience looks to hear from us. The way you do that, it's pretty simple. Go to ratethispodcast.com/cptguys. Leave a rating, and write a review. The review is what you tell us. That's your opportunity to say, here's what I want to hear more of. So that's how you do it. Jeff, want to thank you for coming on, talking to us, throwing around some topics in the industry. This is great. We want to have you back. We can do some of these frequent sessions where we talk about what's new, what's happening, where the industry's going. We're not going to talk politics, nothing about the New York governor or anyone living down in Florida. We'll just leave that aside. But thank you again for joining us in this little conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a blast. Thank you so much.
Sri, great way to round out the week, right?
Absolutely, Peter. But how about topics such as alligators in the Everglades? Are those okay?
Yeah, sure. Why not? As long as they're not.
My dream to go see them someday, the Everglades.
We should do that. Road trip to the Everglades. I like that.
Thank you, Peter.
There you go. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to having you join us on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.